This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Jill Mangaliman, Executive Director of Got Green, a grassroots group in the Seattle area led by young adults and people of color that promotes the movement for an equitable green economy as the best way to fight poverty and global warming at the same time. Jill Mangaliman is here today to give us an update on Got Green projects and to tell us about the newly released Climate Justice Project Report, Our People, Our Planet, Our Power, community-led research in South Seattle, published in March 2016 by Got Green and Puget Sound Sage. Welcome, Jill.
Hello.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Got Green, why Got Green was started, and your history?
We were founded in 2008 and really wanted to create a space where young people of color could be leaders in the green economy or green movement. And we define the green economy as access to healthy foods, living wage green jobs, access to reliable public transit, and access to healthy, affordable homes. And for us, you know, we really wanted a space where people of color could talk about the environment and learn about our impacts in the climate change. So at Got Green, we have grassroots leadership committees who lead campaigns, and we have a food access team led by women of color and low-income moms, basically working on increasing access to healthy foods in their communities. They worked on the Fresh Bucks, which is a program that matches low-income dollars at farmers markets so people can get more local produce. And also, we have a young leaders team currently, the Young Leaders in the Green Movement, who are focused on creating green pathways into careers for young workers of color. It's an extension of targeted local hire in which the people who are most impacted by climate change and social and racial injustice have a pipeline into opportunities for them to lead rather than a prison pipeline. And so we're looking to create some sort of resolution that would require companies and the city to hire our young folks from impacted communities, especially young workers of color. And both of these projects were started by community-based research. Our model is that the solutions and priorities come from the grassroots, and so formed grassroots committees to design a survey to interview people in the community. For the Women in the Green Economy project, we interviewed women of color and low-income women and found that access to healthy food was their priority and formed the committee and campaign around that. And just the same way, in 2013, our Young Workers in the Green Economy project resulted in a campaign for green pathways led by people from the survey. So it's a kind of our model, and it's continuing today as we just recently released the results from our Climate Justice Project, which we launched last year.
Would you now go into detail about Got Green's Climate Justice Project? What is the purpose?
So Got Green, in collaboration with Puget Sound Sage, which is an organization based in Seattle that focuses on racial equity and worker empowerment, they do coalitions and policy and organizing to really push for good green jobs and equitable transit development and housing and transit. And so Sage and Got Green have been close partners for the last few years, and both of us were really being pulled into conversations around climate change policy. And for us, we didn't feel right unless we were having these conversations with our communities, communities of color, the people we work with the most. We wanted to know, like, what are people saying on the ground? What is going on with this issue when we know it impacts our communities? However, those issues don't seem to be perceived to be a priority. And so the goal of this community-based research was really to start to have those conversations on the ground, to in part ask people what were their priorities or what they thought about for climate change in regards to their communities, and also wanted to bring up this issue in a way that our communities talk about it. So I think that by going to people where they're at, asking them what's important to you, in a way, it was a learning on both parts. Folks were learning about the impacts of climate change as it was particular to their neighborhood. And then at the same time, we were learning from them what resonated with them, what were their priorities.
Would you say more about who is involved in the Climate Justice Project?
Yeah, so Puget Sound Sage and Got Green both lent our staff to coordinate. And so we had organizers, and then we formed a grassroots steering committee that had basically young leaders of color from the community. For example, Hodan Hassan was a volunteer at first, but she had, you know, like been through the Washington Bus Fellowship and was involved with Black Lives Matter. The same with other members like Sara Tekola, who we all know has been really a leader in the divestment campaigns and also Black Lives Matter. And so really wanted to bring in folks who were connected with the community, what was already happening in the community, but also wanted to bring in folks who cared about this issue and wanted to basically start having these conversations with others. And so in the steering committee, they designed the survey. They also did educationals and shared and learned about what were the particular impacts, such as sea level rises, the rising cost of food, temperature, heat waves. And so it was in part also a way for Got Green to also learn more and more about the science and impacts. Even though our mission has all this time be ending global warming, a lot of us weren't even as far as like, what does that meant particularly to South Seattle? And we learned that climate change is a threat multiplier. Communities who already have been struggling to afford basic needs or struggling with unemployment, particularly low-income people, people of color, that for climate change, it would disproportionately harm them. And so we really wanted to hit that home that communities of color are hit first and worst, not just in Seattle, but globally. And so it was really great for Got Green and Puget Sound Sage to have these conversations with ourselves and then to take it to the street. And we launched the survey in May, and, you know, with the goal of 150, we reached 175 of face-to-face interviews. And then Sage and Got Green surveyed 30 organizations which served our targeted audience in South King and South Seattle. So we also got information from gathering places and organizations who had stakes in this as well.
Before we go into detail about your report, in what ways is climate change a threat to racial justice?
Oh, yes. So because of the existing conditions that communities of color have in the country, in Washington state, we know that already are facing environmental racism. They say that 68% of African-American households live, you know, within a radius of a coal power plant. And with the whole thing of that's happened in Flint, that is not something that is an anomaly that actually happens quite a bit, where communities are placed in places that are unfortunately sacrifice zones, that there's more pollution, there's just more risk for environmental health issues. We could look at South Seattle as well, like where the location of all the highways, the industries, the roadways, and where people have the highest asthma rates amongst their kids. And so I think that there are already existing conditions in which climate change just makes it worse. And so the people who are already struggling will unfortunately get the brunt of the impacts that come from climate change. And we know, like, globally, this is impacting the global South in a way that we could look at it more regionally. It also impacts, like, the South of our city. And, you know, it's true that everyone's going to feel the impacts of climate change in their own various ways. But if you have limited resources, if you already live in a neighborhood that is vulnerable, then climate change will only make that worse. And so if we're looking at from an equity standpoint, the communities that have been historically cut off from opportunities or have less resources or community spaces that are there, are well-resourced, then they will be very vulnerable in the face of emergencies, not just major storms, but would, you know, see the rise of costs of basic needs from shelter to food to energy, but also the very real impact and the stresses that come with not having a lot of historical access to resources. For Got Green, we noticed that, you know, we're a local organization. However, we see ourselves as part of a more of a global movement because we recognize that people are migrating because of climate change too. So this is impacting not just people here, but people everywhere. And so we want to be in solidarity with other communities who are impacted by climate change.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jill Mangaliman, Executive Director of Got Green. Our topic is the Climate Justice Project Report, Our People, Our Planet, Our Power, community-led research in South Seattle. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. Would you say more about the community-based participatory research approach that you used?
Yes. So it is really our main tool as far as how to, at Gokurin, we identify priorities. But there's two things that we really appreciate about it. One, that it has community ownership and that the questions are designed by community members themselves and not policymakers. And that also the results we report back and we continually report back to those that were involved with the projects. And then the other great thing about it is that it's not just some report that we produced, but also recommendations that we're hopeful that our communities can implement or push for, and that this document can also be used as a tool when they're advocating for these initiatives. So it's an organizing tool, but it's also a way for our voices to get lifted up. And yeah, it's been a really great way for us to start having these conversations with our allies, with our partners. And it's also been a way for us to bring up new leadership and for folks to be able to, you know, speak their truths. One of the survey participants was saying at a release that, you know, now she feels her opinion is valid, that she can say that she also can be an expert on climate change as far as how it relates to her and her community. And so that's our goal. It's really to affirm the expertise that the community has. People know what they need and want that will improve their conditions. And so to bring this information forward to, you know, lawmakers and policy folks and the general public, like, these are our solutions right here. And so that's why we do community-based research.
Who are the survey participants in terms of where they live, race, and age?
We actually surveyed folks who lived in zip codes in South Seattle and South King County. And I know South King County is really large, but we focus more on the surrounding neighborhoods like Renton and Skyway and White Center. And so basically really wanted to talk to people who were living in those zip codes, but also wanted to make sure that we were talking to folks who were like working class or were from the targeted communities of color, and really wanted to have a wide spread of folks. So we tried different languages, including Spanish, Somali, Chinese, and Tagalog. But most of the speakers were English, had English and spoken the top language at home. Also, actually, the folks we did talk to, most of them were younger, in their 20s to their 40s were the top age groups, but we were able to get people from all ages. And something else significant was that majority of the folks, with exception of 18%, were not homeowners. And so we surveyed 175 people, and yeah, majority of them were people of color. But we also made sure to have a variety of folks, various genders and age groups.
You said a bit about this earlier, but what types of questions did you ask in the survey?
So the way that the survey was designed, it was actually a very long survey. It was our longest community-based survey ever. But people stuck around for the full thing. It was about 20 to 30 minutes long. And some of the questions really did bring along the participant. Like, the first ones were pretty easy. It's like, when you hear about climate change, what do you think of? And most folks were like, oh, you know, polar bears. And then as the questions went on, it would be more about like them and their community. Like, what are your priorities right now in your community? Look at this list. Are you impacted by pollution? Are you impacted by rising costs of foods? Are you impacted by noise pollution? And so there was actually a section where they were able to be like, oh yeah, I do live on a really busy street where there's a lot of, you know, semi trucks. Or yes, actually, I noticed that last year there was a really bad heat wave and I don't actually have air conditioning or like a cooling center nearby. So there started that kind of like, oh, yes, this is happening where I live. And then there were other questions where people were able to say what they thought were the solutions. For example, we asked them questions like, what do you think the city should do about flooding or heat waves? And so folks were, you know, writing their ideas or even just thinking about like, oh, yeah, what should they do about heat waves? Surprisingly, some folks were like, oh, I go to the library through the mall. And so that brought up a conversation like what spaces are available to people for emergencies or extreme weather. So it was a conversation starter, but also a way for us to see where people were at. One of the more striking information that we found from the survey was that only 24% of the people surveyed actually thought that their communities were most vulnerable, that low-income people were vulnerable to climate change when they asked who was most vulnerable. And that just goes to show how the dominant mainstream narrative is not working, that people don't really see themselves in this issue as because it's talked about in some kind of like far away faceless thing or something that has nothing to do like with what's happening locally. And so I think that the goal also is to really bring home this issue so people can understand how this impacts directly Seattle and South King. So our goal was really just to get folks to connect with the issue as well.
What were the key concerns of the survey participants about climate change impacts?
So when we asked about climate change impacts, the top two that people definitely felt that they would experience were health issues and also rising costs of food. And it makes sense because people are already feeling that issue right now with access to health and also with the food access. The other concern when we asked more generally, asking them about what were their issues right now in the community, the majority of the folks said displacement, and really goes to show how the rising costs in Seattle are impacting people's ability to live in the city. And as we did more conversations about this, we started to make the connection like how this would play out with climate change if people are not able to live where their communities have been or where their jobs are. Basically, our communities are very transit dependent. And so as we're pushed further away, we're cut off from the places that make us stronger. And so a big conversation was like, how do we keep communities rooted in place so that they have those social safety nets when disaster happens? In other words, that we would rather see resilient, well-resourced communities for just the long haul. I think that was the third issue that really came up as well, is like, how do we address this big issue around housing and what other population would be really impacted by climate changes are the houseless populations. We have a state of emergency in Seattle. And so if people are losing their homes, how more vulnerable they are to the impacts of climate and the extreme weather and access to services and resources. So we had all sorts of conversations with that. Part of the survey also is that we followed up with roundtables and one-on-one discussions. And that was on a lot of folks' minds.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jill Mangaliman, Executive Director of Got Green. Our topic is the Climate Justice Project Report, Our People, Our Planet, Our Power, community-led research in South Seattle. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. What support did you find for reducing carbon emissions?
In general, when we talk to people, people were really, really supportive of coming up with ways to address climate change. I don't think there was a disagreement that we need to do something. We looked at 14 different types of strategies of like on how to reduce pollution, and majority of them received very high ratings. I think people are looking at solutions that also have a co-benefit that's both economic and environmental benefit to their communities. For example, looking at like transit, like equitable transit that doesn't displace people but connect people. Another solution they looked at was basically how to have more community centers and gathering halls be climate prepared, because we know when there's an emergency, the usual first responders are people from the community who will check on them. And so wanting to make sure that we had the training and the resources to handle those situations. But in general, like the folks who stopped were interested or in really this issue, and there was no argument that we needed to do something to really address this issue of climate change.
Part of your report was recommendations for actions and policy that will maximize community resilience and build stronger participation in the fight against climate change. Would you like to give an overview of those recommendations?
A lot of the recommendations in this booklet, there's definitely a lot of them. And I think just goes to show that there's plenty of ideas that the community has. And a big one is to really address displacement and have strategies to keep people rooted in place, such as community land trusts or neighborhood preservation. And something else that people were really interested in is like community benefits for the city. The other biggest area was how do we continue to get this information out there, is to do definitely more community engagement and more trainings around climate change issues and really supporting initiatives that kept fossil fuels in the ground to basically make sure that we're not worsening this problem. And so really wanting to push for really strong policies that reduce the reliance on fossil fuels. And then lastly, making sure that there is a community-driven process in our action plans and also in our budgeting. And so there's a section about climate adaptation and participatory budgeting, which our city is learning about as well. I know there's a youth project, a youth initiative right now where they're looking at participatory budgeting, but in a way allowing those communities who are most impacted to be able to come up with ideas on how they can make their communities healthier and strong and take those investments and put them in where they need them so that we're not just having kind of a status quo or making things worse, that actually we're seeing improvements in these places that have been neglected for so long. So those are some of the ideas that are floating out there. I know that for our Got Green's Climate Justice Committee, they're really leaning towards addressing this issue of displacement and are learning more and more about the connections and what's going on in the city.
What are the most important lessons you learned from the survey?
I think that what's interesting is that people who gave the survey, who were part of the project, have walked away with more confidence and better understanding of what climate change means and what we want to do about it, and are kind of forming messages or ways to talk about it with their community. And I think that that in itself is what we're hoping, that this is an issue that is happening here and now and that our communities really do care about, contrary to what may be thought out there, that this is a really important issue for low-income people and people of color. And then lastly, that the other important thing about this survey, and not just that we're having these conversations, that there's action, and that now that people are having those conversations and trying to figure out what are the things that we need in our communities, it's also forming more spaces for people to really look at this issue and really take it to their lawmakers, take it to their relatives. And so it isn't just about, again, this one thing like the weather or climate change is actually a very intersectional issue in that it's connected to many parts of our lives. And so I think that's the conversation that we're really wanting to have, that this is also about racial justice. This is about food justice. This is about worker justice. And so really making sure that folks see this as an issue that's connected to various parts in our lives.
What does leadership by people of color mean for the broader environmental movement?
So there has been a people of color-led environmental movement for a long time. You could say that our Native community were the original defenders of the land. And so there's a very invisibilized history of groups that were oppressed, also seeing that they will defend the environment as well. And so I think it is really, one, recognizing that other part of the movement, and also really listening and learning from the people who are directly impacted. And for us, we're also, as an organization that lives in the city, lives in the United States, also recognizing how we benefit from this very system, this current economy and environment. And so we try to, you know, build solidarity with our rural communities and other communities around the world, especially in the global south, and so trying to understand these systems. But that said, I think that for the mainstream environmental movement, they're learning and really wanting to, there is a motivation to really learn about the disproportionate impacts, learn about what communities really do need, and how do we talk about these issues, or what are the solutions we want to see in our communities? Because there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution. And yeah, I think that there really is a shift right now to see that this has as much to do with justice than the environment. And really, it is about how do we improve those conditions, especially of those who are already challenged with the current systems we have. So I think there's a lot of growing and learning to do, but it's happening.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'm hoping that folks read the report. It was made to be more of like a document that folks can utilize or can try to see how this issue relates to them. And so I'm hoping that these conversations will continue, and then that this issue, again, continues to bring in new leaders and definitely more and more campaigns and ways for people to improve the conditions in their community. And I think that it's a really exciting time right now. People are taking to the streets. And even if this issue of climate change, we have some tough times ahead, I think that people are really energized and want to take action.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Jill. You were just listening to Jill Mangaliman, Executive Director of Got Green. For more information, check on the web at gotgreenseattle.org. Again, that's gotgreenseattle.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on Listener Power 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on kexp.org.